20 years of Arsene Wenger, 20 years of Arsenal being a top four club, 9 trophies later, the big man himself is about to celebrate his 20th anniversary as manager of Arsenal Football Club. It's a momentous day, a momentous year, and I'm joined by Nick English.
Hello.
James Bench from the London Evening Standard.
Hello.
And Hush Karai.
Good morning.
And we're going to be discussing all things about the Gunners and their fabled, legendary, mythical boss, Arsene Wenger. And we're going to begin with 20 years of Wenger, the only place we can begin on such a hallowed anniversary. I'm going to ask everybody in the pod what their favourite Wenger moment is, their favourite story, anecdote, the event that sums them up to them, and why. Nick, I'm going to come to you first.
Great opening question, by the way, because there's so many Wenger moments. Like, I've had a list of about 20 to go through when you asked this, but I think my favourite Wenger moment, this might not be hugely popular, is when he was sent to the stands at Old Trafford and sent the stand. The reason I love that moment so much is because of what happened. It was another game where Arsenal, it kind of encapsulates the second decade of Wenger, is that Arsenal completely bossed the game at Old Trafford, scored a goal, which was borderline legitimate. It was an excellent goal as well, and it was disallowed in classic Old Trafford style back then. And Wenger kicked a bottle. If you haven't seen the Gordon Strachan commentary of that moment, it's absolutely amazing. It's readily available on YouTube. And he gets sent to the stands, and he goes, do you know what? I'm just going to be defiant about this. Goes up and just stands in amongst the fans. And what I like most about that is that the fans around him just start clapping him. just go, do you know what? That's pretty ballsy. That's pretty good. And Arsene Wenger's like, where do you want me to go? Like, I'm Arsene Wenger. Screw you. And I just absolutely love that because it's kind of, in a 30-second period, sort of encapsulate everything that wasn't quite right about Wenger everything that might have gone wrong with Wenger in the second half of his tenure at Arsenal so far.
Fair enough. Hush, I'm going to come to you next. What's your moment of 20 years of Wenger?
My moment comes from the 2013 FA Cup final, just after we'd completed the comeback against Hull from 2-0 down, and we just won the trophy 10 years of not winning anything, and Wenger finally got his hands on something. And there was a moment just after the final whistle blew when Bakary Sagna dropped to his knees, and it was a few months of, you know, is he going to stay, is he going to leave? He was our sort of captain of that team, and Wenger had granted his move to Man City, which he made that summer. And there was just a moment where Wenger went up to him, he fell on his knees, he kissed him on the forehead, and they had just like a 10 seconds, their eyes locked, and you could just sense the relationship that had built from the last couple of years, and you get a feeling of the sort of relationship Wenger creates with his players, and it's more than just football, it's, you know, it's life, and it's everything that he brings to Arsenal, just encapsulated in that small, tiny sort of moment. It was beautiful to watch. It brought a tear to my eye.
I can almost hear the emotion in your voice right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it was more pertinent because after the 10 years of disappointment and hurt, and even in that match going 2-0 down, we shouldn't have won it. So it was just everything coming to a head, and you just let the emotion pour out. And yeah, it's a small moment, but one that really sort of sticks out in my head.
Sometimes it is the small moments. But James Bench,
well,
I should say.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you Bench.
A lot of people do. Fantastic. I mean, so many Jameses around these. I like
Let's
to feel special.
Let's differentiate. What is your Wenger moment?
Well, I've got two.
Ooh.
So the first one, I mean, the last 7 or 8 years have basically been Arsene Wenger against Twitter. In a sort of, you know that,
and there is now Twitter moments.
Absolutely. And you know that they'll both eventually take each other down.
Is he the whale?
He could well be. But the summer of 2014, absolute fantastic, hilarious moment, being those pictures of Arsene Wenger on a beach in Brazil whilst Chelsea are signing Cesc Fabregas and Diego Costa. What are you doing, Arsene? And then a few days later, up pops Alexis Sanchez, you know, one of the great signings of his tenure. And just there's that picture of him lying on the beach, hand on his head in his hand, just having a great time. And I'm delighted for him sometimes when he gets those little victories.
Yeah.
The second, I mean, as anyone that's ever seen the numerous GIFs and vines of Arsene Wenger and his coat will know, he's a man that kind of can sometimes struggle with the basics, and he's a little bit clumsy. And there was a story I heard the other day that really summed him up for me about how he kind of sometimes takes his eye off the ball a bit. The canteen at Colney, he goes to get ice cream. It's a Friday. He's treating himself. And he goes to sit back down, but somewhere along the line, the ice cream's fallen off the plate. Where's the ice cream gone? It gets all the way through his main course. And all the Arsenal players are aware of this, I should say, at the time. All the Arsenal players are looking on as he comes to his ice cream, only to find the ice cream's gone. What has happened to the ice cream? And, you know, I think that's a side of Wenger we don't always see, that he really does make his players laugh an awful lot. Talk to some of the ex-pros, and they've got nothing but great things to say about him as a person. So, yeah, you know, a couple of classic little laughs there from Arsene Wenger.
He's not just a beach man either. I mean, we all remember the pictures of the water slide as well, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, how can we fantastic.
And he's got a wonderful taste in swimwear, I must say.
You know, bald eagles that look like Arsene Wenger.tumblr.com is a top website if you get the chance.
Well, that's the hilarity. Now we're going to get more to that gooey emotional stuff. What Arsene Wenger means to all of you guys. Nick, you know what? Let's come to you again first. What does he mean to you?
This was a dangerous question to ask me for several reasons. I was 9 when Arsene Wenger took over. To me, he's always going to be my favourite all-time manager across any department for various reasons. But it's hard to remember now that we're all, you know, we all say on Twitter that we're really liberal and all this sort of stuff. But 20 years ago, attitudes towards, you know, foreigners coming in and taking your job were not very... very favourable. It might not sound like it, but both my parents are French, and
your surname is English.
My surname is English, which is a bit odd. But some of the treatment that Wenger got in the media, and some of the opinions of him from people I knew or people that I saw, I sort of saw very much those same opinions being deflected towards my mum. And to me, like, the way that he battled that and the way he sort of integrated himself into English culture, I saw that sort of very much paralleled with how my parents did. And to me, that was always quite special. But, you know, it's like I've always got this bias against Wenger because of who he is as a person. If you ignore all the results, which I happen to think are quite good, to me, like, he's been more than a manager. He's been like sort of like a role model. And he sort of reminded me what you can do as a person and how you can naturalize yourself.
That's a cracker, and I can't beat that.
Played the French card.
Absolutely. How am I going to follow that? Well, obviously, I'm lucky enough to cover this club kind of full time, which is a fantastic job, and one I've obviously only very recently got into. Like Nick and everyone around here, I don't really remember a time before Arsene Wenger. And you don't get to speak to him very often, but sometimes in press conferences, if no one else is around, they might actually take a question from myself. And if the time's right, if he's in a good mood, if he's turned over some decent opposition, he can actually make you feel incredibly charmed when he does talk to you. Just a question I asked him after the Watford game about Rob Holding, where, you know, he kind of thanks you for asking the question and kind of says, oh, that's a very good question, and gives you a really excellent response. And you think, well, this is amazing copy. But also, he just makes you feel kind of 10 feet tall. And he's not always like that. He can be a nightmare sometimes when you're trying to get him to say anything. But, I mean, when he's in the mood, he's just the most charming man I've kind of seen in football. And a pleasure to kind of follow him every single day as a job. He's an outstanding individual when he's in the mood.
Hush, what does Wenger mean to you?
I can only echo what Nick and James also said. But personally, like, beside my dad, he's probably the biggest sort of male role model in my life. The way he carries himself through the thick and the thin, when it's going really well, he's humble, he's honest, and he's not too, you know, doesn't brag about his achievements. And when it's not going so well, when he's the butt of everyone's jokes, when other managers are taking pops at him and, you know, he's having a hard time, he carries himself graciously. He's classy. And in terms of, you know, football tactically and the way I think about football, I watch football, and what, you know, I think is the right way, the wrong way to do things, everything is taken from his template. From, like, head to toe, everything Arsene Wenger does and everything I think about the game ultimately stems from his teachings. So, yeah, he's the biggest football role model in my lifetime, absolutely.
Very nice, very good. All three solid answers there, I must say. Cannot beat that.
Is someone chopping onions in here?
but we've talked about your favourite Wenger moments. We've talked about what he means to you. Now, what does Wenger mean to Arsenal? James, what do you reckon?
I mean, he is Arsenal, and I know there's a lot of fans that would say it's Arsenal FC, not Arsenal FC. But just, I mean, you know, talking to Ray Parler about this recently, just go back to what it was like under Bruce Rioch. And Arsenal was successful, but everything about that club was different. The stadium was different. The defining style of play was different. 1-0 to the Arsenal. Yeah, it still exists now as a song, but it's an ironic song, isn't it? You know, 1-0 to the Arsenal because we're about to run in another four against you lot, as Chelsea very nearly discovered. And I mean, he has built everything from that club. And I think it's kind of really summed up in that Nicolas Anelka deal. Goes out, buys a kid for 500 grand, turns him into the best striker in Europe at the time, sells him to Real Madrid for 23.5 million. They discover they bought a bit of a dud. And with that money, he goes and buys Thierry Henry and a new training centre. I mean, he has turned Arsenal into perhaps the best run club in England, one of the best run clubs in the world. And everything about him has his fingerprints over it. He is that club. I'm conscious I'm babbling on, but again, talking to Pedro Martinez Losa, the women's manager, and the esteem that he holds Arsene Wenger in, and the way that he sort of talks about their kind of brief conversations together when they have them, it's remarkable that one man can have that impact on the club. And I don't think you can talk to anyone at Arsenal without realising just how much they respect him.
Mm-hmm. Hush, what do you think Arsene Wenger means to Arsenal?
James hinted on it there, but the measure of the man is the way his ex-players, people he's worked with before, people that have sort of, you know, they don't need to wax lyrical about him, but they still go out of their way to do so. He's everything to the club. His blueprint is all over the club. He is Mr. Arsenal. I can't really put it any stronger than that. Anything Ben's mentioned there, he's done everything in it. He gave an interview to Esquire about, I think it was 6-7 months ago now, and he talked about how he deals with games before and afterwards and how much he thinks about them and the sort of the lengths he goes to. After a match, he sort of sits at home in front of the fire for hours on end just thinking about the club, what he's going to do the next day, and he lives and breathes this club. And yeah, it's just any Arsenal fan that, you know, the Wenger out brigade and what have you, if you lend yourself some perspective, one man can't do more for a football club than Arsene Wenger's done for Arsenal.
That's a good way of putting it, actually. Mm. Yeah. Nick, what do you think Arsenal? Arsene Wenger means to Arsenal, I should
yeah,
say.
Yeah, the name is... is
it's fitting, always, isn't it?
Still, 20 years later, still trips me up. I mean, Wenger changed management. In many ways, I'm not talking about the obvious stuff like, oh, he stopped Nigel Winterburn eating pies and Ray Parler drinking 7 pints of ale before every game.
Well, hey, England, he tried.
He tried. Yeah. And not like bringing you through. I mean, he changed like expectations. He changed what managers do in a football club. He changed how managers are expected to treat their players. I'm not saying he hit the heights of Messi and Ronaldo, but like Messi and Ronaldo, he's raised expectations for managers to levels that they were nowhere near before. I mean, clubs look at Arsenal now and they go, look at what is possible if we get it right. Look at what they've done. We can achieve that. The fact that he's seen as mediocre by a lot of Premier League fans and a whole load of Arsenal fans on Twitter, it just tells you what he's done for raising expectations as a manager. I mean, imagine a world without okay, imagine a world where there's no money. Okay, we're gonna go to utopia.
John Lennon, eh?
imagine a world ignore all the money. Wenger is outstanding as a manager, right? Burnley, he's outstanding as a manager. Now, imagine Arsenal are the richest club in the world for a minute. You know, Manchester United. Like, have they done that badly over the past 10 years? Has Wenger done that badly as a manager if they're the richest club in the world? I don't think so. I mean, you look at the number of big clubs and international coaching setups that have tried to hire him. I mean, Spurs are basically trying to emulate Wenger with Pochettino. They're basically trying to emulate his career plan. And I'm not talking about forever in your shadow and any of that useless banter. They're basically trying to emulate Wenger because that is what he's done for Arsenal and that's what every club is trying to do.
Well, into like building a philosophy that's going to last and sustain.
Yeah.
And
exactly, yeah.
The whole stadium plan and everything that goes with it and having Pochettino stay at the club
while
the stadium plan is going through, holding onto young players, building a young core. That was Wenger's model after leaving Highbury.
And if you want to look at how well he managed that stadium move, I mean, we were talking about this earlier, just look at what's happening with West Ham.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Securing fourth place. I mean, they got the stadium for free. Securing fourth place every season when you've got, you know, £600 million worth of stadium to pay for, it's an achievement up there with any other.
One of the things that James McManus, our social media mogul always says is that the unbeaten season is the worst thing that happened to Arsenal because of the expectations that it gave to Arsenal fans. I mean, you have to remember that Wenger did this and got top four every season, right? Ask Klopp how difficult that is. He fell off with Dortmund. Ask Conte how difficult that is. Ask Man United fans how difficult that is, you know, to achieve those things. Even ask Benitez, you know, how difficult those things are. And he achieved those things, you know, in the early part of his career, that unbeaten season, against Ferguson, the greatest manager of all time, pretty much. The only one who, you know, can really hold a candle to Wenger in terms of, you know, well, Wenger can hold a candle to in terms of Premier League management. And he had unbelievable resources at his disposal. Mm. So, I mean, to say his achievements are nothing short of, you know, pretty incredible would be a disservice to the man.
Well, I was going to say, we talked there about what Arsene Wenger means to Arsenal. One thing I didn't ask you guys beforehand is what it means to the Premier League, but I think you've kind of summed up there. You kind of raised the level of competition, raised the sophistication level in English football.
Yeah, managers are now expected to get top four every season. That's the expectation that's placed on Mauricio Pochettino, and that's because of Wenger.
Mm. But also, I guess he made, this might be a controversial point for some people, but he made Ferguson a better manager because he had to raise his game to that level. Some people have talked about Mourinho making the Premier League much more tactically sophisticated, a much more high-quality league, but I mean, if you can argue that Wenger was the first guy to really ratchet up those levels.
I mean, those fights in 98, 99, the Man United treble-winning team were incredible, but they had to go to those heights. You know, Ferguson had to buy Dwight York because they couldn't keep up with Arsenal, and an Arsenal team that were kind of not spending a huge amount. Yeah, I mean, he brought the absolute best out of Ferguson, and I still think for all that we wax about the Premier League nowadays, that peak was really those years when Man United and Arsenal kind of between 97
clash, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were just beating each other to a pulp every season, and that's why most of the time they couldn't get very far in the Champions League because they're just destroying each other.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to move on now. Can I go a bit more granular about Wenger's 20 years and talk about Wenger in matches? First of all, your definitive Wenger matches. James, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
It's quite hard to pick one because there aren't that many times, actually, when you look back on it, when everything clicked and when it clicked on the big days. But for me, in terms of doing it in a pressure moment in Europe, it's got to be that 5-1 in the San Siro. Mm. Everything went right. You had the best striker in the world, Thierry Henry, at his absolute best. Robert Pires pulling the strings in behind. But also, you know, compare that to all these great forlorn European nights we've seen over recent years where they go to the Nou Camp and they play really well and they get knocked out. This really, like, everything was on the line there. You know, they managed to make it out of there. You know, I think they had a point after the first three games, and that was through a dodgy Ashley Cole header in the last minute. And they had to win to stay in it. And not only did they win, they battered one of the best teams in Europe. Fantastic game. I think any Arsenal fan or anyone who's covered Arsenal will never really forget that. I think that's when it reached perfection.
Mm-hmm. Hush.
For me, it comes in the towards the end of the 03-04 unbeaten season. It was a terrible, terrible week. We started off getting knocked out of the FA Cup against Man United, where Ali Adier started up front for some reason. Then
memories.
Yeah. Then Wayne Bridge at Highbury happened. Claudio Ranieri's Chelsea knocked us out of the Champions League. And then we were 2-1 down to Liverpool at halftime at Highbury. And the whole season really unravelling in the space of 7 days. And at halftime, you could see Wenger followed Henri and Perez and the rest of them into the tunnel. And then we came out and put in 45 minutes. Like, I don't think I've ever seen us play at such pace, with such quality, with such aggressiveness, with Bergkamp, Vieira, Perez, everyone.
Was that the va-va-voom moment?
It was the va-va-voom moment, because it was the year before where he said, I'm going to finish the season unbeaten, and then everyone laughed him out of Old Trafford that day, and then 12 months later, you know, proved everyone wrong.
Mm, absolutely. Nick, are you going to pick a moment of brilliance from when their backs were to the wall, or are you going to pick something a little bit different?
I think the game I've gone for is a bit weird for several reasons. I've gone for the Champions League home game against Juventus in the 2006 season, Champions League quarterfinal. Mm. Where Arsenal won 2-0. And the reason I picked that game is because it was a strange moment for Wenger, because he was being very pragmatic with his team. He had a very, very defensive setup, mainly because he had awful defenders. I mean, Eboué was at right back, Flamini left back. I think it was Senderos and Touré at centre back against Ibrahimovic, Mutu, and Trezeguet, which was probably one of the best strike forces in Europe, if not the best, at the time. But the main reason I love that game is because it was the emergence of Cesc Fabregas as a player. In the first half, Cesc Fabregas, he got a goal, but he was absolutely awful. He was getting bossed around the park by Vieira, who was playing for Juve. And something happened at halftime. I'm guessing it's some sort of Wenger pep talk of some sort. And in the second half, Fabregas absolutely dismantled one of the best teams in Europe, pretty much single-handedly. Got an assist for Henry's goal, which sealed the tie, basically put it beyond them. Mm. And I think that as a game, in terms of, you basically saw a player, you know, this 19-year-old just completely come of age during a game. Mm. It was unbelievable to watch.
I feel almost Brad brings up now. We're going to move to the worst matches of the Wenger era now. Oh. We're going to go back up after this. I promise this isn't the beginning of the downward spiral.
We have been waxing lyrical.
We have. Yeah. But Hush, what do you think have been, you know, the polar opposite performances of the Wenger era for you?
The two that stick out.
Can't have two.
You can't have two, really.
We all know what we're all going to say anyway.
I'm not going to go for the obvious one, then. I'm going to go for the other one. It's the 6-0 to Chelsea on the 1,000th game against Mourinho.
What a landmark, eh?
Yeah, like this week's been, it was like a week of celebration of a Wenger and 1,000 games and all the stats were floating about. He's done this, he's done that. And then we arrived at Stamford Bridge and Jose Mourinho hit us for 6 and red cards to players that didn't deserve it and all sorts of different stuff. And yeah, I remember just thinking on that day when the final whistle blew that was it for Wenger, and then there was no coming back from that. It was never going to get any better. Mm. And, you know, I hold my hands up high and say, you know, I never knew any better. But that felt like a watershed moment, feeling that, you know, football's gone away from Wenger now. Mourinho is sort of new age tactics, more sort of pragmatic football was the way forward. This is the last time I felt really, really, really pessimistic as an Arsenal fan under Wenger.
On that day, actually, weirdly, I also felt very pessimistic on that day. But on that day, I remember going to play football, playing 11-a-side. And when I got to the clubhouse, Arsenal were already 4-0 down. And Gibbs had gotten sent off instead of Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mariner. And there was a kid's birthday party set up with loads of like Arsenal-themed balloons. And there was just a child crying at the table. And I was just like, oh, God, welcome to being an Arsenal fan. Like, this is what it's like.
That child's on Twitter now.
Yeah. This is why the Wenger Out Brigade exists. Days like that.
But Nick, just to stick with you, what would be your worst match of the Wenger era?
It's got to be 2011 League Cup final versus Birmingham City. I mean, just one of the most crushing days ever. And what made me most frustrated is that Birmingham came to play. They played really, really well. They put in a great performance. They were really physical, really shook. That sort of era of Wenger sides between, you know, sort of 2008 and 2012-13 were really easy to sort of dominate physically. Mm. But Arsenal had a good team and we were playing really well. And then Arsene Wenger took off Robin van Persie, which was an awful decision. Awful decision. He was the captain at the time. He was the leader. He led the line brilliantly. He was in the form of his life. And the team that was totally inexperienced behind him, bar a couple of players maybe, totally crumbled. Mm. Had no outlet ball. And they really, really struggled with that game. And then they lost it. But ultimately, it was character building for some of them. Lauren Koscielny, who made the key mistake, you know, he's ended up being, you know, a world-class defender.
I do wonder, I mean, that game, I think, changes so much of that time because it meant they didn't win a trophy with Robin van Persie. Mm. And you do feel that actually if they'd gone on, won that game and, you know, they had the momentum behind themselves, actually maybe that might have convinced van Persie to stay. And he is, I mean, for all we talk about losing Fabregas and Vieira and whoever, I think he's the one that they lost a bit sooner than they would have liked. Mm. And that maybe he could actually have fired them to the title in one of the last few seasons. I really think that's
I do remember actually being at a talk, I can't remember where now, but Philippe Clerc was talking about the importance of Van Persie to Wenger, and he saw him basically as like, he didn't say it in those terms, but as a 9.5, like the next generation of European forwards, and he actually built an entire new system to basically serve Van Persie and get the best out of him. So in some ways it was totally reliant on him. So you take him out of the equation, it all just crumbles.
Well, you look at Lewandowski, Suarez, Benzema. I mean, Van Persie never quite hit their heights, maybe, but very much
not for Arsenal.
Very much in the similar mould. Very much in a similar mould. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. James, your worst match of the Wenger era.
Well, so I was sitting here thinking, when's someone going to mention the 8-2? When's someone going to mention the 8-2? Because it's literally, you just think, worst Arsenal game, 8-2 against Man United.
That was on my birthday.
Sorry about that.
Arsenal made Wayne Rooney look like Totti. It was bizarre.
Yeah, but they've done that on many an occasion, and they still will. They'll continue to do it. But actually, then I kind of, the more, this is the only question I promise I haven't prepared for. And then the more I thought about it, actually, the more I thought, you know, humiliation on the pitch and really embarrassing. But that 8-2 brought Per Mertesacker, brought Mikel Arteta. I might be remembering this wrong. It might also have brought Andres Santos, but you can't win them all. So for that reason, if I kind of think, when did all of Arsene Wenger's flaws and when did all of Arsenal's flaws manage to all coalesce into 90 minutes of absolutely awful, stupid football? It can only be the Monaco game. Was it 3-1 loss?
Oh, I'd banish that from my memory.
They're diabolical for 70 minutes and they deserve to be 2-0. Dan, yet they're still creating loads of chances. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain goes and scores a fabulous little goal. Back in the tie. Shut up shop. You can still get away with this. They concede at the other end. It's Arsenal. That's everything that, you know, kind of the fair weather, I haven't done my research pundits will kind of roll out against Arsenal. You know, that when they always find a way of shooting themselves in the foot, and not just with like a, you know, a pistol, like with a huge semi-automatic.
With a cannon, you
yeah,
might say.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That was the performance the IT crowd were banking on.
Yes. What's he doing bringing on Walcott that early?
Absolutely. So those were the pod's memories of 20 years of Arsene Wenger. But earlier I spoke to sports journalist Amy Lawrence and Arsenal club photographer Stuart McFarlane about their new book, The Wenger Revolution, 20 Years of Arsenal. So I want to start off by asking, what do you think are the greatest misrepresentations and kind of misunderstandings around Wenger and his reign at the club?
I think, first of all, most people don't really realise quite what Arsene Wenger the man is like. Mm. I think he has an image, a persona that is largely based on post-match interviews or pre-match interviews, where he tends to be a bit more dry than he is in the rest of his life. Mm. And those who have been lucky enough to work with Arsene Wenger, if you speak to the players, and Stuart obviously has seen him around the training ground and around matches and all things Arsenal over the last decade or so, he is a very engaging human being. He's got a magnificent sense of humour, partly because he's cleverer than just about anybody that he meets. And if you're bright, that gives you a good handle on quick one-liners. He's kind and thoughtful, and he's a great human being first and foremost, quite apart from the football manager that everybody thinks they know.
And Stuart, I mean, obviously you work quite closely with the club. You must see Wenger behind the scenes more than most people.
Yeah, he's been brilliant to me ever since my first ever job with him. Mm. And for me, Amy's right, you see this sort of personal persona and it's not really him. I see him on the training pitches and I don't think there's anyone who loves football as much as he does. You know, that's where you see his real personality, I think. He just, even yesterday, just big smile on his face when someone does something a bit special. That, you know, he just loves football, and he has got a great sense of humour. He's a very funny guy, and I have spent quite a bit of time with him. He seems to know everything about everything. I sat on a coach going to a press conference last year or the year before, to a Champions League press conference, and we talked about photography for 45 minutes. He was asking me about the benefits of digital photography over film and stuff like that. And, you know, he really generally knew his stuff. I was really staggered.
Mm. I remember Lee Dixon telling me once that, you know, if you need to get know what kind of tog of duvet to get or double glazing, you know, Arsene's your man. Like, always go to him about virtually anything you can imagine, and he's got a kind of reasoned view about things. So I think, you know, although he's this football obsessive, he has got an incredible general knowledge. For example, the line he came out with when David Bowie died earlier this year, not many managers would have had this kind of overview sense that he was able to just pluck out the air and say something very meaningful. He has got a good handle on an awful lot of things, which is what makes him an interesting guy.
I go to Glastonbury Festival every year, and every time I see him for pre-season, he'll ask me how it was, and he was really intrigued about, you know, 180,000 people sleeping in the field, no trouble. You know, he generally was interested in, you know, I suppose for him, he's still wants to learn, like a lot of us don't think we've got the capability to do that anymore, but I think he does.
Was it the perfect match for Arsenal, or could he have done it at another club, do you think?
I'm sure he could have done it at another club, but I think that there was a vision. You know, a lot of it comes down to chance meetings, good timing, first impressions. And now, Arsene Wenger was known to David Dean, who was on the Arsenal board quite a few years before he joined the club. And that first impression that was made back in 1989, in fact, was massive. And it took someone like David Dean, who I think had a bit of vision to where English football was going, and he could tell that football was coming out of a quite parochial, inward environment, which it had been for a long time, and was going to spread its wings and was going to become more international and was going to try and be more expansive and interesting. And because he thought football was going to move in that direction, I think he just thought Arsene is the man. And nobody else, I don't think, at any other club would have known him to approach him in that way. It was the fact they had a personal friendship that made it happen. But he clearly came to an environment that was now looks terribly old-fashioned and, you know, making huge changes to the way that footballers looked after themselves, the way they lived their lives, a style of football that was introduced. This all felt quite revolutionary in quite a quick period of time. And I think, you know, it wasn't a coincidence. Although some managers don't like to credit him with it, it obviously had a knock-on effect. And you look around any club, not just now, but maybe 10 years ago, and everybody had upgraded their methods.
Stuart, one of the things I love most about the book is you can just see, obviously, the changes through the actual images, like the fidelity of the pictures through to what people are wearing. The stands are obviously different at Highbury and the Emirates. I mean, how much does the photography kind of sum up his longevity and his time at Arsenal for you?
Well, I think the two biggest changes are probably the move to the new stadium and then the building of the training ground. In a way, I'd love to have been able to go back and re-photograph the last season at Highbury again, because you don't actually realise what a major thing it is until a few years on. But the whole putting the pictures together in the book, we were trying to show change, and obviously the manager's stayed constant, but everything around him has changed completely.
When you look back at 20 years of a football club, which is what it is, that he's been a driving force behind, and how much change has happened within that 20 years, it's mad to try and present him as a simplistic, one-dimensional figure. I mean, he's had to change within that period. He's seen as a very stubborn man who doesn't change, which in some ways is ironic because, yes, there have been accusations where you think, oh, he is being stubborn about buying players or not buying players or this or that. But he's actually a very liberal-minded man and a very open-minded man. And some of the things that he's been a big part of rebuilding that training ground to make probably the first modern training ground. I mean, lots of people have got some that are a bit bigger or a bit newer or a bit more expensive, but that was the first one that was designed absolutely to the nth degree to be exactly how you would want a modern athlete to be living their professional life. Everything from the amount of light and space that was there, the fact that they have a certain area where they come in off the pitch to take off their shoes and boots and keep all the mud and the dirt in one room before they enter the main bit of the complex so that no dirt goes inside, it stays clean, it stays fresh. Even the cutlery that they use and the chairs in the canteen, supposedly Arsene Wenger had a saying so that they would be the maximum level of sort of comfort for athletes' bodies, the specialists that come in to help them look after themselves, the nutrition, you know, all these elements were things that he thought were a big part of it. You know, if you're going to be the best you can be, you want to put the finest petrol in your Mercedes, not something that's, you know, gonna run a I don't know, a Skoda, or probably a bad example, but you know what I'm getting at. And I think the way he's even dealt with people over the years, you know, the way he's dealt with players, obviously inspired and educated a whole generation to think about things in a different way, and then having to deal with some that have been more difficult, changing eras. There's not a one-dimensional Arsene Wenger. He's had to stay strong to himself in that period and to his ideas and his beliefs. And sometimes I think he's felt like he's a lone voice in the wind.
And also with him, one of the biggest changes as well, we used to have our pre-season training camp in Austria. I think we did 10 or 12 years in a certain place, 2 weeks away at a health spa. That was it. No outside contact. But now the manager understands that the club needs to be built up commercially. So now we're going to Australia next year. We've been to China, Vietnam, America. So he understands that. I'm sure if he had the choice, I'm sure he'd go back to Austria. But he understands that this is the way that we have to work to build the club.
There's often been talk that he's probably going to step up into the boardroom after he's kind of done with being a manager. He's seen it through to as far as he wants to take the job. Do you think he's got a role to play in ensuring his legacy is as great and brilliant as it deserves to be?
I don't know what he'll do. I think who knows what he'll do when he's finished at Arsenal.
I don't think he knows.
No, I don't. I think in all my time working, photographing him, he's always looked as hungry and as enthusiastic, first on the training pitches, last off the training pitches. There's no difference in from the first time I photographed him in 20 years ago to yesterday. My son's 17 years old, doesn't know anything else other than Arsene Wenger as Arsenal manager. You know, that's a legacy in itself, you know. So for me, I hope he can stay for as long as he likes. He will go down as the greatest manager that the football club's ever had, in my mind. If other people disagree with that, that's fine. But for me, he's a brilliant, brilliant man. He's been brilliant for my football club. So I just love him to stay as long as he wants.
Would you say have been your highlights looking through the book myself now? I mean, there's even a foreword from Arsene Wenger in the book. People should definitely check it out. It goes right from the start all the way to into the future as well, actually, in terms of all the chapters. Working on it together, what would you say were your highlights in terms of putting it together? And maybe the things you learned from putting it together that maybe you didn't know beforehand?
The thing I most enjoyed, really, was we got the opportunity to take about 100 of these pictures and sit with Arsene and show them to him. And that was great because... Yeah. You know, it's one thing us looking at pictures and reliving great moments and also some challenging moments along the way as well. But to see his expression and hear his memories when he was looking back at things, and he's not by nature someone who likes to be nostalgic, you know, he's very much in the present or looking towards what's around the corner. He's not the easiest guy to say, oh, come and have a nostalgia ride with us. But I think he really enjoyed it, actually. Yeah. And I was particularly touched when the affection that he had for certain players was really, really clear when he was looking at pictures of them in their pomp. Mm. But also the affection that he had for Highbury was something that struck me a lot, because Highbury had it's almost like an extra personality in all of his success. You know, he had his players and he had his staff, but he also had Highbury, and it was a very, very beautiful and special building, and it had a soul, I think, as the words Arsene put in the book himself, it had a soul you could never recreate. And it's one of the issues that anybody who gives up an old ground for a modern stadium faces. You do leave that behind, and it's hard. It's kind of like losing a friend or someone you love. Mm. I found it touching to see his kind of nostalgia for Highbury as well.
Yes, I think maybe some fans think that he was behind the move and he was just desperate to get out of Highbury. But as Amy said, you know, he was talking about even driving past Highbury on a match day at Emirates just because he wanted to see the old building, stuff, you know, stuff like that. You really get the feel that he really did love the place.
Mm. And that's where, you know, we again, you go back, and one of the things that Arsene Wenger always said right from day one, I mean, I do remember a period when I think he was, if not the first, one of the first to pick a team with no English players in it. And he was criticised for it. And he's always said the same thing, which is, I pick a player for his quality, not his passport.
Yeah.
And there's this notion that some people have that you have to be English or you have to be homegrown to really love a club or really appreciate it or really get it under your skin. But I think that the players some of the great players that he brought to the club just blow that theory out of the water, because to think that Thierry Henry loves the club or love the club or felt part of it any less than Ian Wright is rubbish, or to think that Patrick Vieira or Dennis Bergkamp felt less of it than English players. It's just not true. Mm. And I think that it showed, and he shows, that it's not about where you come from. And it's a global game now, and there are fans who are getting up on a Saturday morning at 3 a.m. in certain parts of the world so they can watch a live game or ridiculous hours of day or night to catch a Champions League game, whose dedication to the club is the same as a person who lives down the road from the stadium and has a season ticket. And I like the fact that one of the things that he has achieved, or this legacy, or this 20-year period, is a sense that, you know, the club matters. You can get really into it. You can belong to it, no matter where you are, who you are, and where you come from.
That was Amy Lawrence and Stuart McFarlane speaking on behalf of their book, The Wenger Revolution, 20 Years of Arsenal, out now on Bloomsbury. Well, on that point, we're going to now move to heir apparents, because if Wenger does go at the end of his contract, whether to go upstairs or to a new climbs, who would be the perfect person to carry on his great works, the ideal successor to move into the Emirates and take his great project forward? I'm going to come to you first, Hosh.
I'm going to throw Eddie Howe's name into the hat, because he did a really good job in persuading Jack Wilshere to go down to the South Coast a few months ago. And part of it was selling the club, selling his vision, selling his idea and his philosophy of football, which is what Wenger does with players that he signs. He doesn't sell them in terms of, you know, here's a big pay packet and here's, are you going to make a captain or that sort of stuff. He sells them a vision and an idea and the ideals that he sort of lives his life by. And he has an overarching control over Bournemouth. He doesn't just manage the first team. You feel like he's in control of the youth team, the first team, and everything that goes around with that. And all the players sort of respect him more than just a tactician as well. Mm. He's like...
Just on that point, though, do you think there's any worry that he's quite reliant on his situation at Bournemouth? When he went to Burnley, he didn't really like it there. He struggled quite a bit. He couldn't quite replicate the kind of structures he had at Bournemouth.
To a certain extent, I see where you're coming from. But I think because Arsenal is set up in such a similar way to Bournemouth, and he won't be alone. He won't have, and he won't just come in and have everything to do himself. Arsene Wenger's, he's going to be in some sort of senior position. So he's going to help him sort of ease into the role. And because he's a young English manager, I think Arsenal could benefit from that.
He'd be like the perfect fusion of George Graham and Arsene Wenger in one man.
Hello. So, now we're talking.
That's a scary thought. But yeah, yes. a lot of the criticism that Wenger gets.
A bit of Chapman,
you know,
in there as well.
Oh, yeah. Herbie.
Yeah, unfairly as it is, he's not the Mourinho Simeone type barking orders from the touchline. He doesn't really, you know, he doesn't wear his tracksuit bottoms on the touchline. He doesn't really get involved, people think. Mm. I think Eddie Howe could be the right sort of fusion between what the best of Wenger is and where football's going and where Arsenal need to go. I think he could take us somewhere.
Well, speaking of football, where it needs to be going, where Arsenal should be going as well, I think you've got a manager that will fit that brief as well.
Yeah, Thomas Tuchel.
Ooh. Mm.
Killing it at Dortmund. Mm. Likes to bring young players through, obviously a favourite of Wenger, although his success has been hit and miss over the years. Plays with pace, likes to play counter-attacking football, can set up his teams in a variety of manners. Whether he would have the same skill in terms of bringing together all the aspects of management as Arsene Wenger, I don't know.
But if you've got Wenger upstairs, maybe you don't need to.
If you've got Wenger upstairs, like this has been mooted several times, him going to a director of football role, I don't know if he'd be able to do that and totally relinquish control. We're seeing at Man United, Ferguson's got his paw prints all over the sort of politics over there, which is you know, a bit of a shame, really, I think. I think he should have just retired and just let it go, frozen.
You got to sing it now, mate.
So I can't hit the soprano notes. No, I think Thomas Tuchel would be a good replacement. I don't think anyone's... It's pointless to try and recreate another Wenger dynasty. That's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Never going to happen. I don't think the modern game allows it. But I think Tuchel, he's got the tactical insight and he knows how to use players very cleverly, and I think he'd be a good fit at Arsenal.
Mm. Nick said he can't hit the high notes on Frozen, but which manager do you think could hit the high notes after Wenger, James?
So I think the perfect choice, unfortunately, can't take the job. I'd give it to Dennis Bergkamp. I do think that Wenger has brought through an awful lot of very intelligent players, and I don't think there's any better than Bergkamp. But Arsenal have got a tour to Australia next summer, so I don't know how Dennis would make that one.
If he starts now.
Yeah.
I just forgot about that. He is from the flattest place in the universe. Yeah, so.
He should be used to runways.
I mean, it's a shame, but genuinely you do wonder if Dennis Bergkamp, the fact that he can't fly means he can't be an elite manager, which would be heartbreaking. But
Arsenal fly to Norwich now, so he literally couldn't even do domestic.
Oh, man, don't get started on that.
Steve Bold could do the away games.
That's true. Yeah. Actually, I am thinking they should go very ambitious with their next manager and go for someone in the Premier League. And I'm building up to this because I think it's quite exciting. I would take Jurgen Klopp.
Ooh.
I think everything that Arsenal fans don't like about Wenger, they'll get from Jurgen Klopp. They'll get passion. They'll get commitment. And they'll still get that kind of free-flowing attacking football, but with just a little bit more anger and a little bit more, you know, edge to it.
Heavy metal rather than jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. But apparently Klopp doesn't like heavy metal or jazz. It doesn't really like music.
A bit more seventh place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh. Ooh. That's a dig. My listener's going to get
it's
that.
True, isn't it?
Has anybody been convinced by anybody else's answers on that one, actually?
I like the Jurgen Klopp shout. I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't rate Eddie Howe that highly. Sorry, Hush.
Any other shouts for Eddie Howe? James, what do you think the idea of Mr. Howe?
No. I think, as you said,
I think Howe's got a time to prove himself still. He's still got a lot to, you know.
It's a bit more. I'm not having a go at Howe, but a little bit Moisey. A little bit Moisey.
Oh, I wouldn't paint him with that brush.
I'm just saying, in terms of like the level Wenger's at and the level Howe could get to, it isn't quite there yet.
But then you have to say, when Wenger started off at Arsenal, you know, what level was he at? It's sort of, it's relative, isn't it?
It's a good point. But anyway, maybe on that note, Squawker chief reporter Greg Stobart was at SoccerX in Manchester this week, where he spoke to former Invincible and Street Child World Cup ambassador Gilberto Silva. Here's what the former midfielder had to say about his former boss reaching 20 years at Arsenal.
Well, you have many ways of saying about different aspects of him, you know, because as a football manager, to stay in a club was 20 years. You have to congratulate the person, the guy, you know, to achieve such a big important thing on his life, on his professional life. And also the way he changed the club, you know, the way he brought new ideas, the way he, you know, he helped to bring good players for the club, and then they gave the club the result everyone expected, which is not so easy. Sometimes you make mistakes, sometimes you make things on the best way. But it's sometimes when you fail, the people doesn't forgive you, you know, and they are so hard. Arsene at the moment is facing in the last 2-3 years, facing a lot of racism, the way team plays, the way they don't get the trophies. But if the people see the entire job he has done for the club, not only as a title, it's been amazing. I hope the people realize that, you know, because once the man leaves the club at some point, it won't be so easy to replace him. We can see an example as at Manchester United. It's not been so easy to replace Alex Ferguson. But it's important, I believe, for Arsene and for the club, and start to prepare somebody when he leaves the club at some point. I don't know if it will be in the end of the season, as his contract expired. But he loves the game, he loves what he does, and he loves the club. This is the one thing that everyone must be sure.
That was former Arsenal midfielder Gilberto Silva, speaking on behalf of Street Child World Cup. Beyond on that note, the unsung heroes, the underappreciated marvels of the Wenger era, the people that did the most to help him along his way. I'm asking for your kind of picks of either players, colleagues, or just general characters around the club who you think did the most to help Wenger without getting much back for it. Maybe not from Wenger, he's a very lovely man, but maybe just in terms of their general reputation in the game. James, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
If you look at the most successful era, it kind of all dovetails around David Dean. Mm. And I know he's not quite unsung, but I don't think...
He's a little bit forgotten these days.
He is a little bit. And I mean, I think just in terms of that, it's a double act that we kind of actually see but don't often talk about how successful it is. I mean, you know, you'll know with Man United just how important Ferguson's relationships were with his CEOs, with David Gill. and whoever. And I mean, that was a partnership that just clicked. Mm. And you know, those two really got on. And I mean, Ivan Gazidis, I think, is an excellent CEO of a football club as a business, but he's not quite got the football head that David Dean has.
Also, Wenger appointed him, whereas Dean appointed Wenger. So
exactly. And I mean, you know, huge credit has to go to David Dean for backing himself to bring in this guy from Japan, who, you know, the response to him was Arsene Who. I should say on that, not from the Evening Standard, that is kind of commonly misattributed to us. It was actually the Daily Star, I think.
Triggered.
But not us.
Clearing things up. Hush, who is your underappreciated star of the Wenger era?
I think he's underappreciated now because of what's gone on in the last 2-3 years. But
you're
going to say
Nacho Monreal, aren't you?
I'm not. I'm going to say Cesc Fabregas. I'm going to say Cesc Fabregas because our team from...
You're getting daggers, mate. I'm not going to lie. I've looked around the room. It's,
Yeah, God, so I might change my mind here. No, our team from, say, what, 07 till about since Cesc left in 2011, we weren't very good for a long period of that time. And we didn't have any leaders in our team. You know, everyone was always talking about the easy pundit's excuse of saying steel or character. Fabregas provided that. He carried us. Because he kept us a large part of the reason we stayed in fourth and sort of kept our necks above that parapet was the sort of Cesc Fabregas sort of puppeteering our team along.
I mean, it says a lot that he's one of the few kind of players from his generation that's got a flag on the Kenfryer Bridge.
Yeah,
they'll never build a statue for him, but I totally agree with you there. And look, it's not his fault he went to Chelsea. Mm. Arsene Wenger didn't want to sign him.
Everyone he's played for Spain, he's got an incredible record. For Barcelona, for Chelsea, he's unappreciated everywhere.
Kind of as hard as nails as a guy of his stature could be, as well, to some extent. I mean,
he was, yeah. He was playing injured for long periods of time as well, which a lot of people don't realise. Mm. And sort of coming on as a substitute, scoring 2 goals and then getting subbed off, things like that. You know, that shows how important he was. You don't see Wenger doing that with any player now, would you?
Wenger hasn't played with a broken leg in a Champions League.
No,
he
hasn't.
But Nick, who is your underappreciated star of the Wenger era?
So I was thinking about this. The obvious one is Lauren, because it's like, oh, he was so underrated. He was so good. He took really good penalties.
Roy Keane,
like,
rates him.
Yeah. And I was like, not really. And then I was thinking, okay, who's really unappreciated? And I was thinking, well, unappreciated in the club, probably Gilles Grimaldi. Did a great job when Wenger brought him in. Really helped the English players get to grips with, you know, some of the concepts that Wenger was trying to bring in. Always did a job for us, not always, you know, brilliantly, but he really tried. And now, obviously, a scout for the club, he's brought in loads of good players for us. But then I thought about the question. I thought, who is the most unappreciated Arsenal player I can think of? And it is undoubtedly Emmanuel Adebayor.
You guys are going for the hot takes today.
Yeah, I was being brave.
He is massively unappreciated.
It was a good celebration, to be fair.
He's also massively available.
He's massively available. He is undoubtedly...
You could have gone Bentner, that's too fair. You have gone for the non-nuclear option.
This is a guy who's like come from... like, you know when they say footballers come from poverty? Yeah. Like, we're talking like, you know, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Very, very difficult relationship with his family. He's been rinsed by his family several times. I read not long ago that Emmanuel Adebayor has this very, very generous foundation set up, which actually donates as much or if not more than Didier Drogba's does per year, but it doesn't suit the PR narrative. Mm. I mean, he's not, I mean, if you've read the stories about him recently meeting with the guys from Olympique Lyon, he's not a nice guy. You know, money's tainted him and that sort of thing. But in 3.5 years, he became our 9th all-time best Premier League goalscorer. He's the only guy apart from Henri and Bergkamp, if you ignore those stupid fan votes for Wilshere, who's won goal of the season. Mm. His contribution to that team, given that he was brought in as a backup striker in those 3.5 years, was actually pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I know what he's done to the club, and I know the relationship between the fans and Emmanuel Adebayor is fractured beyond belief. But he contributed a lot to the club. Obviously, he left for money, but he left for money for specific reasons. Mm. And I think that Arsenal fans in time probably need to relook at that relationship and what he's done.
I appreciate this is the Wenger podcast and not the Adebayor podcast. But whenever you want to do your Adebayor podcast, sign me up. But I think it's incredibly sad the way we see Adebayor treated by certain portions of the media. And, and you know, I know that no one here has ever not made a joke about Adebayo. But I mean, the stories coming out of it from a French website that is literally a spoof website.
Yeah.
But there's just this assumption now. Oh yeah, of course Adebayo would turn up with, you know, a fag in his mouth asking for whiskey. I've never seen that player on a football pitch before. I've seen like a consummate, hardworking professional who, kind of, by the time he got to Crystal Palace, had probably, you know, he'd been used up. But totally agree.
Ask Real Madrid fans what they think of Emmanuel Adebayo. Yeah, absolutely. They really rate him.
You know, kind of Spurs fans, even though the way it ended, they know just what he can, you know, what he can do when he's at his best.
So maybe the A you need is get Adebayo back to lead the line and get Tim Sherwood in as the key motivator to bring the best in.
Assistant, he can learn.
He is from Boreham Wood, so
he is. We are going to have to fly through. But we'll want to the wrap up of the pod now. Time traveling Gunners, as I said a little earlier on. If you could bring back one player, coach, or a character from Arsene Wenger's 20-year reign at Arsenal to slot into the club today, who would it be and why? We are not allowing, might I just say, Henri, Vieira, Bergkamp or Adams. So, because they're boring. We want some more interesting ones. So, James, please hit it.
I've heard all the hot takes here and I'm going to bring you a steaming hot one.
Oh, lovely.
Please do. It's such a small room.
Here comes the steaming.
Weak link in the current team is left back. Which left back do you bring back? Ashley Cole at Arsenal was, almost throughout his time there, the best left back in world football.
Ironically, not a car crossover player. It's just
absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. If you just paid that extra $5,000, isn't it? It's amazing now to think that the kind of he was haggling whether he should be paid $55,000 or $60,000, because that player right now, kind of, you know, up there with Alaba as the best left back in the world, he's on $150,000 to $200,000. Yeah. But, you know, best left back in the world in his day, get him in that Arsenal team, they'll win the title.
Good answer. We've got a lot of spice with our sugar on this podcast, if you want to put it in those words. Don't know if anybody ever has, but we are now. Nick, who is your player from... Who are you going to bring back from the future, basically? What are you going to do?
Again, it's going to be spicy.
Ashley Cole again? You can't be doing that.
I can't bring back Ashley Cole again. If you look at the current team, if you look at the current Arsenal team and you think, what is the one ingredient they are missing? Right, I know we bought Lucas Perez in the summer and I know Alexis Sanchez is working really, really well up front. But if you brought back Robin van Persie at his peak into this Arsenal team, Sanchez on the left, Theo on the right, Ozil in behind them, my God, they would be unstoppable. Yeah. They'd be the only team that would even get close to beating Guardiola's City right now.
Well, as we said earlier, I mean, even the system they play now, the 4-2-3-1 type thing,
he's perfect.
But it's still ultimately a hangover from what Wenger tried to build around Van Persie.
Van Persie's 6'2". This is something that's always forgotten. He's really strong. He was really strong when he was at his peak. His hold up play was excellent. He can play all three positions.
He had it all up front.
He had the total package, and volleys, just volleys. I miss the volleys.
That left foot.
We don't score any volleys anymore. Mm. I want volleys.
You kind of, you used up all your volley quota during the RVP years.
Yeah, we did. Well, he used it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greedy.
We need a volley credit card.
You need to get Alex Song back if you want the volleys, and that's your problem, isn't
it? Well, we are still yet to go to Granit Xhaka. So we're going to see what he's going to bring us.
Well, if Nick brings back Van Persie, I will bring back Alex Song.
No.
No, I'm not.
West Ham's Alex Song.
Can you edit that a bit out?
I
had Van Persie written down, but I've just scratched him off now that Nick said him. But
sorry, mate.
Because like Nick said, I'll sort of dream about Ozil playing behind Van Persie. That would just be a dream come true. But because I don't really like Van Persie anymore, I put Ian Wright down because Ian Wright's what
the Jamie Vardy of his day.
Kind of.
I thought you were going to punch me then, I'm not going to lie.
No, I'm sort of a bit too far away.
Drink a gallon of Skittles
vodka.
No,
but that's sort of, you know, not flat track bully of a striker, but sort of, you know, just a guy that lives on goals. Doesn't really care about much else. He's not too fussed about dropping deep, you know, linking play up. He just wants to be in the box, feed him a chance, put it in the back of the net. It's sort of what we want Lucas Perez to be, maybe, if it works out for him.
Well, it's interesting that in his autobiography, Vardy said he didn't come to Arsenal. But one reason was a style of play. He didn't think that he'd fit in. So maybe he didn't realise he'd be so useful as this kind of like greedy finisher, striker, poacher guy.
Yeah, with this, you know, the Alexis Sanchez, I don't know, call it an experiment if you want, but this sort of playing him up front, moving him out, playing Walker up there and sort of flipping them around. It works, but it's not, you know, you need plan A. And if we had not Robin van Persie, but Ian Wright, just, you know, first choice striker, 30 goals a season. It just takes you from being a side battling to being an absolute contender for the big trophies.
We've touched on some of the problems of the Wenger era in this podcast, as you would after 20 years of anybody's reign. But if you could go back to 1996, when it all began, and you could whisper in his ear either some words of encouragement or caution, what would they be, Nick?
Football is going to change. Roman Abramovich is going to take over Chelsea and change the Premier League and change football, and you're not going to like it, so get ready. Because if there's any reason why Arsene Wenger did not, you know, go on to dominate football pretty much single-handedly alongside Ferguson, who, you know, is the, I'll say openly, he is the greatest manager of all time, then it's because of that. And that was the sole reason. I mean, the financial doping, as you want, that occurred during that era made it possible for other clubs to do it. Man United do it now to a certain degree. You know, Chelsea have done it. City obviously have done it. I think that would be what I say to him, is like, watch out, because this is not what you want to do, and this is what's going to happen, and you're going to really take it personally.
So what happened. You're saying, you know nothing, Jon Snow, and winter is coming.
I don't watch Game of Thrones, but yeah, that sounds good.
Great reference. Hush, what would be your words of wisdom, encouragement, caution? What would you say to Wenger in 1996?
Similar to what Nick said, it's that forecasting that Wenger did when he first arrived. Then he did it again once Roman arrived at Chelsea. It's that looking, you know, long-term planning is a massive part of his success. But it's also been part of his downfall. Sometimes he forecasts too far ahead, and you can't really see that far into the horizon and what's going to happen to football. It happened with the financial doping in 03 when investment arrived. It happened again with the new TV money that's coming to the Premier League. We saved cash reserves over 3-4 years to try and, you know, build up a transfer kitty or whatever you want to call it, so we could attack the transfer market. But then we did that, and the valuations of players in the market absolutely exploded over the last 2 years. And then we sort of fell back into that rung again, where we're not, you know, we can on the odd occasion, but we're not, you know, battling for the top marquee signings in Europe, which is what the whole, you know, scrupulous spending throughout the sort of second 10 years of Wenger's reign was all about, really. So I'd say that, not sort of forecasting too far ahead, living a bit in the moment and sort of, you know, playing for now, investing for now and planning for now rather than
living the moment. I like that. James, we've been on podcasts previously this season. We talked about how Arsene Wenger's like Mad Max if Mad Max hadn't happened. He was waiting for the apocalypse. He was waiting for the bubble to burst. He's waiting for all his like cash reserves and clever spending to kind of win out. And it hasn't. Would your words be on a similar vein, or have you got different words you'd like to give to him in 1996?
I would actually. The two things I'd say. Firstly, if I travel back to 1996, as opposed to anyone, the first thing I'd say is Oasis are awful and they're going to get worse. That would be my warning from history.
We're talking about hot takes.
I stand by my words.
Ben likes Blur.
I would fight for them in the Britpop Wars. But I actually was looking back at what he said on that day, on the 22nd of September 1996, and there were two things that caught my eye. The first is he was asked, are you going to sign George Weah? So it's good to know that as journalists, we've not changed much over 20 years either. To which he said, I'm not going to throw money around. You know, I will give players at this club the chance to develop. And the other thing he said to Arsenal fans was, you know, I don't want to make any big promises. I just want to say to you, come here, come to Highbury and be happy. And I would just say to him, stick to your guns. Got it there.
Stick to your gunners.
Absolutely.
Yeah, here we are.
He'd appreciate the pun.
He would
prefer Blur.
He would, definitely. Song 2 would be apt for the last 10 years of his reign.
I feel like his 20 years have had the kind of variety of Blur's discography that Oasis have kind of stuck on one thread and just kind of, you know, done it into the ground. Whereas, you know, Wenger's a bit of, you know, development.
Oasis are more Mourinho.
They are.
How has it come to this? Where are we going?
Yeah. I'm going to give him one bit of advice personally, is keep the glasses. I thought they were fantastic. He should have kept them going. They'd be really retro and cool now as well. So,
Does he wear contact lenses, or does he have laser eye surgery?
No, he must have had surgery. He's loaded.
Yeah,
he's so rich.
Not seen him in specs for a while, so he must have. Yeah,
maybe you could bring it back. Maybe that could be like the post 20 years era. Maybe that's
frameless glasses is the option as well.
Embrace.
I mean, we all saw that photo shoot last year. Just embrace the inner hipster.
Yeah. Frameless tortoise shell. Nice.
Yeah, it would be beautiful. It would be beautiful. So there we have it. 20 years of Arsene Wenger. Maybe another 20 years we'll be back to talk about how he was the greatest director football's ever seen, but, you know, that's have to wait and see on that one. But anyway, Nick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
No problem. James, thank you for coming in from the Evening Standard.
Pleasure to be here.
It's always good to have you on. And Hush, it's been brilliant.
It's always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. Please look out soon for more special feature podcasts such as this one and more great Squawker Talker podcasts for myself and Nick. And do check out squawker.com and our social media channels, Squawker on Twitter and Squawker Football News on Facebook. Thanks for joining us and see you soon.